From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Surprising the business elite gathered at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, President Donald Trump on Friday largely stuck to his script and charmed the financial elites of the world. His speech, written by former Goldman Sachs investment banker Gary Cohn, boasted of how low he has cut the corporate tax rate in the U.S. Here is an excerpt of what he had to say.
America is open for business, and we are competitive once again. The American economy is by far the largest in the world, and we've just enacted the most significant tax cuts and reform in American history. We've massively cut taxes for the middle class and small businesses to let working families keep more of their hard-earned money. We lowered our corporate tax rate from 35% all the way down to 21%. As a result, millions of workers have received tax cut bonuses from their employers in amounts as large as $3,000. The tax cut bill is expected to raise the average American's household income by more than $4,000. The world's largest company, Apple, announced it plans to bring $245 billion in overseas profits home to America. Their total investment into the United States economy will be more than $350 billion over the next 5 years. Now is the perfect time to bring your business, your jobs, and your investments to the United States. This is especially true because we have undertaken the most extensive regulatory reduction ever conceived. Regulation is stealth taxation. The U.S., like many other countries, unelected bureaucrats, and we have, believe me, we have them all over the place, and they've imposed crushing and anti-business and anti-worker regulations on our citizens with no vote, no legislative debate, and no real accountability. In America, those days are over.
And that's Donald Trump speaking to members of the global financial elite who had gathered in Davos, Switzerland for the annual World Economic Forum. Ahead of his speech, there were reports that some members of the audience would be walking out in protest of racist comments that Trump recently made about African nations during immigration negotiations, but it was unclear if the walkout transpired. Instead, a well-behaved Trump seemed quite at home with his fellow billionaires and heads of state. My guest is Paul O'Brien. He is the Vice President for Policy and Advocacy at Oxfam America, where he oversees the group's research, policy, advocacy, and campaigning work to influence the U.S. government and U.S. corporations. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, I suppose we shouldn't be terribly surprised that Trump behaved himself. There had been so much anticipation about him going to Davos and speaking, because I suppose the world's global financial elite, like the U.S. elite, simply don't like Trump's vulgarity, but they quite like his actual financial policies, right?
Yes, I think so. He was with a comfortable crowd in that respect, and it was one of the more magnanimous speeches that Trump has given. But if you work for the global poor, it still didn't get you anywhere close to what we need from a U.S. president.
So let's parse a little bit of what he said. He tried, essentially very successfully, I think, spun the idea of America first as America is open for business. Ahead of his trip to Davos, much of the European press were sort of scoffing at this idea that he was coming to a global forum, touting America first, you know, again, something that's just considered vulgar. But he turned it around and said, America is open for business. And he made it really clear that that he puts America first, like every other country should put America first, should put their country first. And that when America is prosperous, the world prospers. What do you make of that sentiment in particular? When America is prosperous, the world benefits.
Well, the sentiment, I think, is precisely the right direction to be going in. The notion that a global economy is best fostered by statesmen who understand the concept of win-win, that in a world where markets are fairly regulated and focused on prosperity for everyone everywhere, that it's actually going to work out pretty well for particular countries because you can sell products. But when you start your sentence with the words America first, it's very hard to sound like a global statesperson. So he did precisely what you said. He spun it. But the fundamental ideology behind America first is still there. It's a zero-sum ideology, which is, and he went on at length during the speech, for America to do well, it can't be on the wrong end of zero-sum transactions with other countries. If we're going to make great business deals, others have to lose. And it's that notion that by focusing on America first, he's going to force the United States into a much more transactional view of the world where it makes deals in its own interests where others have to lose, that shows the toxicity of the idea. He'll never be a global statesperson as long as he's starting speeches with the word, let me explain America first.
He very much touted the fact that he was cutting regulations. And I want to paraphrase what he, or just quote what he said. He said, we've undertaken the most extensively regulatory reduction ever conceived. Regulation is stealth taxation. The U.S., like many other countries, unelected bureaucrats have imposed crushing and anti-business and anti-worker regulations on our citizens with no vote, no legislative debate, and no real accountability. But we do vote in the government that, has the previous governments that have set up a regulatory structure, because regulations are, after all, protections, right? So, I mean, how do you view his claim that these are, somehow these unelected bureaucrats that are crushing the American economy?
Well, exactly so. So if America first is the ideology, this deregulation approach is the strategy, and it is deeply worrying if you're living in extreme poverty. Let me just give you a bit of context around that. In 2015, there was another strategy on offer, and you saw it in the Addis Ababa financing agreements, you saw it in the Sustainable Development Goals, you saw it in the Paris Agreement on Climate Change. And the heart of that strategy was, we know where the big money is. We know it lies with corporations and with public institutions, with governments. We know that taxes are what's going to lift people out of poverty through healthcare, education, better social services. But if we're going to get those institutions to work, they've got to be accountable. They've got to be transparent. They've got to be inclusive. What Donald Trump was offering us with this deregulatory strategy is, we need to make better deals. We need to transact in one-off situations for narrow self-interests of particular American companies. What he's offering with that is a race to the bottom. It's not a surprise that his very first policy act when he got into government was to make sure that American oil and gas companies were no longer required to be transparent about the deals they make with developing country governments. And this week, there's laws potentially going to be passed to lock that change in executive orders into law. That is deeply worrying if you care about making sure that the oil, gas, mining wealth of poor countries actually goes to their people. He wants a race to the bottom with less transparency, less inclusion, less accountability, because that's where a deal maker makes their money.
If his talk of lowered regulation was welcomed by at least corporate representatives, how was his talk about trade received? Because much to the dismay of European heads of state, he has basically put on hold indefinitely the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this massive free trade agreement that many progressives criticized. And then he said, only by insisting on fair and reciprocal trade can we create a system that works not just for the US, but for all nations. Trump in his speech also touted bilateral trade agreements as a way forward. How was that received in Davos?
So in Davos, probably positively by some, because let's remember that you've got corporate titans there who are looking to transact big deals that their own companies and shareholders can profit from. But for the heads of state, my guess is that there was some nervousness. It's hard to, this is a battle about co-opting words. It's hard to argue with fair and reciprocal trade agreements.
Indeed, fair trade was coined by the nonprofit world as an antidote to unfair free trade.
That's right. And Oxfam for many years sought to champion it as a different way than either no trade or completely unregulated trade. What we have to be thinking about, though, and my guess is that the more visionary state people in Davos and corporate leaders were thinking about is, we've got to build over the long term a well-regulated set of marketplaces and public institutions that reward the best corporate behavior, so that if your company can innovate more effectively, then it's going to do better. What Donald Trump is offering with this short-term, transactional, less transparent playing field is it's whichever corporation has the best lawyers that's going to do well. Take the analogy between trade and tax. He supports, he promised that he was going to unrig the system, but he's basically supported the agenda of those who want to use tax avoidance to pay less money in taxes, and therefore less money for healthcare, education, and so on. I can give you more stats on how that's going if you'd like.
Right, and he even touted Apple as one example of how corporate behavior is going to benefit everybody. You know, I think it's also important, Paul, for us to step back and remind ourselves what Davos is all about. The World Economic Forum, for years, is an annual forum where the global financial elite get to rub shoulders with heads of state in a remote, hard to access without private jets and helicopters location in Switzerland, right? So put that into context historically for us. What does the World Economic Forum represent? It's not some sort of formalized structure, is it?
That's right. And I was watching the speech and the logo behind it, and it looks like any other large multilateral gathering. But of course, it's by invite only. Of course, it's an arbitrary gathering that has no real mandate. This is what we are now faced with in terms of robust multilateral institutions that have rules and open accountability. Oxfam has engaged with Davos for many years now because we try to draw attention to the fact that we increasingly have an unstructured global economy. Since the last Davos report we did, we've seen a new billionaire being born every 2 days. Of all the wealth that got created since the last Davos, 82% of that wealth went to the top 1%, while the bottom half of humanity, that's about 3.5 billion people, got nothing. So for us, Davos is a moment to remind those who profit from an unstructured global economy that not only is it their responsibility to think harder and do more, but in the end of the day, it's going to hurt them too. Because you can't have this level of unfairness, this level of instability, this level of one tiny group of people profiting from the global economy and expect it to last very long.
Right, and I think they get that, the World Economic, for the people gathered at the World Economic Forum, I think they sort of fear a massive, you know, uprising against this unfair system that has created so much wealth for so few people. The tagline for the annual meeting was creating a shared future in a fractured world. I mean, it sounds so nice, a shared future. Everybody wants a shared future, but only those with the invitation to gather in Davos can be part of that conversation, apparently.
Yes, there's something about the word sharing. Look, some of the people that go there by invite are some of our supporters.
Sure.
They choose to use their wealth and generosity to help us fight poverty all around the world. And we are very grateful to them for that. But our larger argument is there's something profoundly wrong when one person has $100 million and can change the fate of nations, our currencies, our whole peoples, by what they choose to do. We're grateful for their charitable instincts.
Yeah. Benevolence, there you go.
Benevolence, right. But it's just, the question is how much power should one person have if what we're really trying to share is a world in which everyone can lift themselves from poverty? And that's our challenge to Davos. So we go there. We're glad they continue to invite us. Our head, Winnie Byanyima, has been a chair of committees there. But she, every time she goes, challenges them to translate their sentiments of being benevolent into structures, rules, and laws that actually requires them to be part of a more inclusive global economy.
So a great way, a very straightforward way to share in the wealth is through taxation. But that's exactly the opposite of what they want. The ideology of neoliberal capitalism is the more money that's in the hands of rich people, the more we all somehow benefit because we get to eat the crumbs that fall off their table, right?
A 1.5% tax on the wealth of the world's billionaires could put every single child into school everywhere.
Oh, wow.
You know, one of the things we would like is the kind of leadership that would translate benevolence into something closer to taxation. You're entirely right.
How do you think Trump's speech is going to be playing here in the United States, particularly among his base? Do you think that he's managed to successfully pull the wool over the eyes of American workers in conflating their well-being with the well-being of corporations? Because the stock market is booming. They love the tax cuts that Trump has offered them and the cutting of regulations. He's just gone to Davos and sold America as being open for business, but made no conditions or didn't even pay lip service to the idea that America wants good jobs for American workers, well-paying, you know, jobs with good job security and benefits. It was just jobs.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it was interesting to me. I heard him a few days ago talk about the $4 trillion of in additional wealth that is now in the U.S. stock market. And today in his speech, he talked about $7 trillion. So either he's got his facts better or there's been a ridiculous growth in the last few days.
Some reporters even pointed out that some of the stats that he mentioned in his speech about African-American wealth and about the number of jobs created under him were simply continuations of trends that started under Obama.
Sure.
So yeah, his relationship with facts is always elusive.
It's interesting. But I mean, he is a politician and he's going to tout whatever has happened to happen during his presidency. And he won't be the first to have done that. So where do I think Americans will really come out? You know, I think some will take solace from what he wrote. I watched the speech on a conservative, very conservative news site. And I watched the commentary coming in, and it was all best speech ever, and this is the one president who tells the facts. I think there's a group of Americans, I think it's an increasingly small group of Americans, for whom he is doing precisely and saying precisely what they want to hear, and they're not making a connection between their own lack of well-being and the fact that he continues to rig the rules in favor of the extremely wealthy. I think there's a group of people who are deeply and increasingly energized to revert American leadership in the world back to something that is more about protecting a rules-based international order that's much more inclusive of women and men. I think we should talk a little bit about what happened on the gender front there, of much more inclusive of different nations and much less about this sort of zero-sum transactional mindset that we've been talking about. But the real issue, as we both know, is the moderates in the middle and people who are making their mind up about President Trump, who may have voted twice for Obama and decided this time to go for Trump. I think many of them are going to be increasingly disillusioned about the disconnect between the speeches that he makes in a moment like this, where he was quite well behaved for him, and what's actually happening in terms of policy and action in the administration. Take, for example, the migration issue. You know, his one big comment during the speech was that he wants to create a meritocratic system, which is not one that his family ever had to go through, that allows America to pick and choose who comes. I think there's an increasing group of Americans who say, you know, that's not what America is about. Of course we want the best and the brightest to come, but we've always done that by offering sanctuary for those who are fleeing strife, who are deeply needy, and who just want to work really hard, rather than having the government means test you against a set of standards that is basically, by this administration, is going to be trickle down and transactional.
Well, Paul, give out a website for Oxfam.
Yeah, www.oxfam.org. You'll find the report that we released in Davos, Reward Work, Not Wealth. And if you want to find out what we're doing in the United States to publicly and privately challenge the Trump administration and work with Congress to build a more reasoned foreign policy that serves the global poor, we're at www.oxfamamerica.org.
We'll post those links from our website later today. Thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks for having me, Sanaa.
Paul O'Brien is the Vice President for Policy and Advocacy at Oxfam America. We've been talking about Trump's speech at the World Economic Forum in Davos on Friday. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.